Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis. Go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
The people who work for me, I don't see it as them working for me. I see it as me working for them and really trying to invest, you know, in them and grow the company that way.
We have a great guest today. We have Cody Thompson with us. Welcome, Cody.
Hey, how's it going, Brad?
Very good. So Cody is a luxury home custom builder up in Flagstaff, a little north of me with T3 Construction. So you're doing some pretty neat things up there north of Phoenix.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty funny. I mean, a lot of people don't know that we get a lot of snow up here, but just being 2 hours north of you. But yeah, no, we got some cool builds going on.
It is funny you say that because, you know, I grew up in California, which isn't too far away. But when I tell most people in Arizona that we have a ski resort, you know, that there's mountains and pine trees and a lot of snow and lakes, they just kind of stare at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, a lot of people don't realize it, but I mean, we get tons of snow. I mean, not as much as Colorado, but I mean, last winter we just got hammered with, you know, 2 foot snows. It was crazy. So yeah, we definitely get it.
You guys in Flagstaff, what are you, 9,000, 10,000 elevation in some parts? I mean, it's pretty high, right?
Yeah, we're 7,000 elevation in town, and then it's up to like 9,000 plus up at the ski resort.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. All right. Well, that's amazing. So maybe we start here, Cody. I know it's, you know, you're in one of those markets that, look, all of our markets are affected by labor and material, especially since the pandemic. You know, I think many of us in the industry understand the labor constraints we have. It's even more unique when you're dealing with builders that are building in Sun Valley and Park City. And I mean, Park City's close to Salt Lake, so they have some builders, but you and Flag, you know, what's that like building in, lack of a better word, a smaller market as far as labor exposure to do these amazing homes that you're building?
Yeah, no, I mean, and that is one of the challenges of building in a small market. And maybe it's everywhere, but I mean, it's super expensive to live here. And so finding quality subcontractors and retaining employees that, you know, they want to live here, they want to live in this this town, it's expensive to live here. So it's really hard to find those quality trades.
Do you feel that, you know, with the cost of living, that's part of the reason that they're driven out and you don't have, you know, exposure to, you know, to a lot of options?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, when I was in college, a lot of my friends moved away because they couldn't afford to live here. And so I really do think the cost of living is pretty high. And so, yeah, a lot of people just go elsewhere. And I, you know, I don't know what the labor is like in Phoenix. I know cost of living is lower. But yeah, I mean, people will move elsewhere to find a higher wage. So
So with, you know, as you mix in weather, you know, how does weather play a role in your builds?
Yeah, no, and as we talked about, I mean, we get snow, and so we have to account for that. And, you know, we're having to cover metal panels and, you know, site protection, snow removal. You know, the house that we were building this winter wasn't too bad, but the last winter we were framing, it's a 6,000 square foot, it's actually 10,000 square foot footprint, and a lot of it was polished concrete. So, you know, we had to rip all the metal edges off of our snow shovels, and, you know, the guys would frame one wall, and then, you know, then we'd have to spend the rest of the week shoveling. So we got to factor in snow removal, site protection, you know, the roofers have to pull off, you know, they have to shovel the snow off. So we definitely have to deal with that in the winter.
Now, when you're dealing with scope of work, such as snow removal, again, I don't know if you're lump sum, cost plus, Cody, if there's kind of a hybrid there you're doing, how does that, you know, play into setting expectations with clients when you're looking at all the different costs that go into building a custom home, especially in your territory and your demographic? How do you lay out those expectations with them to understand, hey, we're going to budget X, but it could be Y?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we haven't always done a good job at keeping those costs in there, but you know, we were fixed price. A couple years ago, we switched to cost plus, and even with the cost plus, you need to communicate all of those costs to the homeowner. And so, you know, we're factoring in snow removal, line for snow removal, line for site protection. And then, you know, we will communicate with our subs too. We'll say, hey, we need you to shovel the roof. We need you to include that in your scope. And so some of those things will be included within their scope under, you know, roofing per se. And so that's how we kind of capture those costs. But yeah, we have to have kind of a contingency fund or categorize those, specify those out.
Yeah, I think the communication is an important point, which I'll come back to. But when you mentioned that some of your subs may carry those costs in their side, how are you working through the challenges like last year, where it's heavy snow season for you? You know, this year's a little bit more mild. Is it an unlimited fund for them to, you know, where they're performing that they have to shovel? I mean, how are they kind of working through the, you know, the challenge of estimating what that season will be?
Yeah, sometimes it's tough. I mean, and it kind of, you know, again, it comes back to communication with clients, because, like, you know, when we're building homes, like we're building, we're almost 2 years into this thing, and so costs are way different now than they were at the start. And so that's just a communication with the clients, and they understand that markets fluctuate, weather fluctuates, price increases happen. And so just communicating with the clients, but also with subcontractors, you know, if we have, you know, if we're doing drywall in the summer, you know, they don't have to provide heat, but if they're going to be in the winter, and sometimes we don't really, you know, it just depends where we're at in the build. And like I said, this winter is pretty mild. Last winter, we got hammered. So it just kind of varies. But again, just it all comes down to communicating. We may have a lot of costs, you know, in snow removal to the client, you know, just being upfront about those.
Yeah, I've found that, you know, we do a lot of cost plus as well. And so when you're cost plus, to your point, you have to communicate more than lump sum for sure. I mean, especially as, you know, some of these allowances may not be enough, or there may be extras there. You know, a lot of clients are trying to understand, okay, where do I have money to move? You know, because the reality is, and this is fairness to all clients, right? It's not as exciting to pay for snow removal as it is to upgrade, you know, their kitchen island possibly. So, So there's some a little dance we have to perform there. Going back to the cost plus, you know, I was just meeting with a client about this, and we're all cost pluses, you know, which I think is very favorable to a client. You know, at the core of it, a lot of clients may feel that you may not have their best interest if it's cost plus. And however, I think most contractors do, like most contractors are vetting, you know, they're trying to contract their subs, they're trying to lock in pricing. No one wants to have that conversation of things escalating, right? Or missing, you know, huge snow removal, you know, portion of the bid. And so Cost Plus in a lot of ways does protect the client. How has your clientele been as you've kind of worked through the different, because you were lump sum to Cost Plus, have you seen a difference in kind of their response and what they like?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think there is that, you know, that kind of thought that Cost Plus, you don't have the client's best interest, but I find that it does. It brings a little more engagement with the client into the budget. And, you know, there's a little bit of a more of a collaboration of like, you know, yeah, we have a set budget and we have estimates on everything. But if we need to have conversations about a certain line item, it's like, hey, what can we do to reduce this line item? And then it's those conversations with the client. You know, we just had one where we cut our stone costs in half by just working with the subcontractor, find creative ways. And so that was a huge win for the client, because it was like, hey, we just cut costs. But if it was a fixed price, you know, they wouldn't see those savings. And so, you know, I think it just brings more communication, more collaboration with the client, which, you know, I love. And I think clients having control of where their money is going, and I think it's beneficial.
Well, the funny thing about Cost Plus, and I love Cost Plus, as we mentioned, I mean, I think there's a lot of advantages, especially with the product that you and I are building. You know, it makes a lot of sense for both parties. But anyone that's done lump sum, because I was lump sum previously, you know, before I moved over. And so that transition from a lump sum to Cost Plus, the paperwork changes tremendously, because now it's documentation and invoices. And, you know, I tell our clients, they can audit us. It's very transparent, you know, how we're doing our billing. How has that been for you organizationally, as you think about the systems and, you know, time and commitments, you know, to put together the documentation monthly and yearly, and, you know, providing all that access to your clients?
Yeah, I honestly find it's actually a little bit easier. You know, we track all of our costs in Builder Trend, and they're actually rolling out a lot of new financial tools. And I know you're jumping on their system, and so super excited about that. I mean, before, we're still trying to figure out their system, but you know, we put together all the costs monthly. We bill our client every single month, and so all of the work in place. You know, everything we've paid out, we just bill our client, and it's just a monthly cycle. And then we have a conversation every month about, you know, what went up, what went down. Are we on target? And, you know, we've developed a spreadsheet that we actually pull out of Builder Trend. They can see the live budget on Builder Trend, but we pull that out and give a little bit more detail. And so we just go over that with our clients every month. And works out pretty good.
So walk us through how you're using Builder Trend financially. And I would imagine your customers have an owner portal as well, because you mentioned they have access to the budget. So, you know, how does that work from a communication and just their comfort in knowing kind of where the project lies as far as the cost?
Yeah, I mean, some clients aren't as engaged with Builder Trend as others, but you know, the information, our goal is to have all of the information there for them in Builder Trends. So they can see the budget, they can see the schedule, they see the daily logs. There's sometimes we'll assign to-dos to clients. You know, if there's certain things we need them information from, we'll assign to-dos. A lot of those are linked to the schedule. But yeah, so we put all of that information in there. You know, they can, because it's Cost Plus, they have access to seeing all of the purchase orders. You know, they can go in and see what our agreement is with our subcontractors. They have access to all of it. So I feel like we're kind of a Builder Trend super user. We use all of their features. And so, yeah, we're really trying to. One of the things that we've been working on with our team is to-dos, and just assigning to-dos to each other, linking them to schedule items. So, our clients have access to all of that, and they can see all the info in there.
So we're very similar. I think Builder Trend super user is a good word, right? There's you know, it's just some love for them, because they do so much to help our organization to run the way it does. When you started moving financials there, you know, how was that transition and kind of education to get up and running?
Well, we're still trying to figure out all of their new, because they weren't quite cost plus friendly, but they are now. So we're still trying to learn all of that. And so what we did, because before it was kind of strictly focused on, you know, fixed price, and that's how we would take those numbers, pull them out into a spreadsheet, and just kind of create the information we need, and then send that to the client. But now I think we're going to be able to keep all of it on BuilderTrend, and clients can see it live and have all the info on there.
Yeah, it's very similar to us, because, you know, for us, Cody, we made this huge move to BuilderTrend end of last year. So end of last year, we started migrating everything over. That way our accounting software was compatible. And what a change it's made. I mean, now I'm looking from January on, especially new projects starting this year of 2024, the way we're able to set it up where the homeowners know exactly what's contracted in that line. So if we have a budget, because probably similar to you, I mean, you have snow removal, right? A good example for me is I have hard digs. So we may have an excavation line that is 100,000, 80,000 is contracted, you know, for the scope of work. And then we may have 10,000 for hard dig, 10,000 for a final grade, right? Touch up grades. So it's easy for the client now to go through and kind of see, you know, fluff, if you will, on what those lines are. We're open and we share that with the client. And then if there's variances, depending on either change orders by the client or variances by us on stuff we're eating, like it's all pretty transparent there. So we found it super beneficial that now I don't have to spend any time with clients calling saying, hey, Brad, where are we at on budget? Can we review? Where do we have fluff and which line? I mean, essentially it's all there and they can just look at it anytime.
Yeah, no, it's super great. They can jump on there. And I actually, I can't remember the financial system you used to use. I actually went through the training to do that, and it just didn't quite work for us. And yeah, it was a huge investment, time investment, but we eventually stuck with BuilderTrend. And so super glad they're coming out with new tools. But we're sticking with BuilderTrend, and it's working out good for us.
Yeah, it's been great. Now, I know you're really big about, you know, a rising tide raises all ships, you know, collaboration over competition. I mean, that's something a lot of us, you know, through these platforms share a lot. You know, how has your relationship with other builders, either specific to your market or nationally, impacted your business?
So that is pretty big for us. And, you know, a couple of years ago, and early on, I tried to reach out to other builders in town, older builders, older, you know, wiser builders, and tried to sit down with them. And some of them, they didn't want to sit down. Others, I was able to sit down with them, but they didn't really want to share anything. And it was kind of a bummer to me. It's like, you know, yeah, I'm a newer builder. I want to learn. But I also want to just, you know, the competition, and not even necessarily competition, but I just want to know the info out there. And so, you know, I've actually connected with some younger builders here in town, and it's just been fun to kind of get to know the other builders in town. And, you know, there's some that I'll call for building science questions, and really tried to just push that collaboration with other builders here in town.
How has that response been? I mean, it sounds like it's back and forth locally. How has it been?
I really do feel like the tide is rising. And so, you know, I'm encouraged with the handful of builders that I've been able to talk to. You know, actually one of the builders that I used to call for advice on building science, we've actually kind of joined forces. So he's our superintendent now.
He's your superintendent?
Yeah. He's our superintendent now. You know, he was building passive homes, and he's super smart. I mean, he's a rock star, and I've been talking to him for years. You know, if I have a building science question, I'd call him up. But then we just kind of got to talking, and I was like, you know, hey, what would it look like if, you know, we combined our talents? And so we had been talking for years. And ultimately, you know, he ended up jumping on board, and I got a few of his guys. But that's been huge for us, because, you know, again, going to that collaboration over competition, it's like we were both kind of struggling, as we all do, to try to find labor, to try to, you know, get clients, to try to, you know, build these quality homes on our own. And so now I feel like we're able to deliver a higher quality to our client. We're able to build, you know, I could stay in my lane, growing the business. He's on site, managing all the details. Like he's so good at all that. And so I really feel like we're able to be in our strengths, and just deliver a higher quality. So that kind of collaboration kind of, really helped our business. So that's been a key thing for us.
So walk us through how that happens. I mean, you're collaborating with one of your competitors. Now you're working together. He works for you. You know, how did that relationship evolve to what it is now?
Yeah, I mean, it really just started out with, you know, me calling him and just asking him questions, and just trying to get to know him, be friends. And, you know, we knew each other outside of, you know, building as well. And so just trying to get to know each other. And then, like I said, it was over a couple years, you know, because at first it's like, you know, do I want to fold my company and go work for him? Or does he want to fold his company and come work for me? And, you know, all of those kind of questions. And it's just kind of like, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? But just kind of over the years developing those relationships, we kind of just decided that that might be the best path forward. And it's been the last couple of years have been great.
That's amazing. So structurally, I mean, you know, was there, without getting too personal, was there ownership involved? Like, how did that transition work where someone had their own company? Like, okay, we're going to work together, you know, and partner.
No, there's no ownership involved. You know, I do try to, give profit sharing and those types of things. So there's definitely a level of ownership, you know, which I try to instill in all of our employees, even our trades guys. It's like, I want them to have a sense of ownership, within T3. I don't want them to think that, oh, they just work for me. They just work for T3. I want them to have ownership of this company. So, you know, with that, you know, I've allowed, you know, a certain level of ownership, but nothing, you know, officially or a percentage of the company, nothing like that.
Which is important, I mean, today to retain talent, to keep them, to hire them, it can be really challenging, right? I'm sure you're the same. And, you know, to create a culture and, you know, profit share financial is always part of that. I mean, that's, people are going to, you know, they want to do better for their livelihood and families, and cost of living is not getting cheaper anywhere, especially where you're at. Any secrets to like the company culture and atmosphere you've built where you're able to retain the talent you have?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's something that I constantly am thinking about. You know, that's another thing. It's like, I'm trying to find out where, you know, the wages for skilled workers in town, you know, so talking with other builders, what are you paying your guys? What, you know, so try to understand that and then trying to pay above that. And then not just paying above it, but trying to, rise the, you know, the quality of our employees, the guys who work for us, trying to give them the tools to increase their skills and their knowledge. So, you know, we have monthly meetings. We talk about building science. We'll go over math stuff. I'm always trying to invest in them and help them grow in their knowledge, and their skills. And as they grow, I always want to continue to pay them more, as they grow. So I'm investing in them. And so, you know, same thing with all of our positions. You know, I'm really trying to pay top dollar, but also give them the tools to work at a high level.
Yeah, it's really important. It can be really challenging. You use the term, you go over math stuff at these meetings. Are these financials or what did you mean in regard to math?
No, like construction math. So, I mean, we'll do math challenges, trying, you know, cause you know, we do a lot of carpentry. And so, you know, we'll, I always do like a, $50, sometimes $100, you know, prize. And so trying to keep all of our guys sharp, you know, on, on math questions, building science questions. I'll test them on all kinds of different things. So we're always trying to learn and grow as a company. So,
maybe there's some context here because you mentioned, you know, the math challenges, why they need to stay sharp. You mentioned that you're reaching out to other competitors to see what kind of wages are. From the sound of it, I'd imagine you're self-performing some of your work because that's where the labor portion becomes really valuable to understand what they're making as opposed to just maybe like a management GC. So is it because of the market you build in that you self-perform? Is it strategy? Is it, you know, what are some of the thoughts behind why you self-perform?
Yeah. So again, I think we self-perform just to manage the quality. You know, I really think that we can deliver a higher level of quality when we self-perform. You know, I've heard you talk about this before, and I think we can still demand a high quality out of our subcontractors. But there's just certain elements to our guys self-performing that we can manage that expectation. And so, you know, one example is, you know, framing. We do all of the framing in-house. And so we had a column on the front of this house, and they didn't mortise it correctly. And so we had to patch it in with a little piece of glue. It's a glue lam column. So they had to patch it back in, and the patch just didn't look the way I wanted. The color of the laminations didn't line up perfectly. And, you know, that was one of those things where it's like, hey, you know, I want you guys to rip that out, redo it, and let's make it right. It's the front of this beautiful home. Like, yeah, maybe is it going to be not seen when it's all stained and all said and done? Maybe, but you know, we're shooting for a really high level of detail here. So let's rip it out and redo it. And my guys can do that. I can ask my guys to do that. If it's a framing subcontractor, they'd probably look at me like I'm crazy. Like, hey, well, you want me to rip this out? Like we made it look good. Like you're going to stain it. It's going to be fine. And so, you know, we are trying to communicate that level of quality and expectation to our subcontractors on the front end with our subcontractor agreements. We're trying to really dial in the scope and the level of quality that we want our subcontractors to hit. But I think some of those things we can have our guys step in and do, whereas it would be a little hard to ask a subcontractor to redo some of their work.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out. Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf and Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action. Yeah, it can be tough. I mean, that's a really good example you gave, because when you're hiring just subcontractors, there's a level of supervision. You know, you can't just leave them on their own for a few reasons. One, I mean, to make sure they're following the design book and specs and, you know, everything properly. But number two, the quality side, like if they're already done the work and they're packing up and they're out, it can be really tough to get them back, right? And motivated to do it right. Yeah. Whereas if you're still performing, there's some value adds there to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, also, like you said, if we're waiting for a subcontractor to come and do a certain task that's critical path, sometimes we can't get them on the schedule, and we can get our guys over there, take care of it. And then we're, you know, we're back on track, or we hit our schedule, if we need to. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. What you mentioned that, you know, from, framing, you're self-performing the framing aspect, other portions of work that you're self-performing.
Yeah. So we do, all the carpentry. So we do the framing. We also do all the trim carpentry, even the cabinetry. So we work with a local, cabinet maker here in town. He does all of the design and all of the fabrication. And then our guys actually work pretty closely, with him, on site. And then our guys do all of the site install. And then our guys are also doing all of the built-ins, you know, any of the other carpentry that we've got to do in the home. We also do the tile. You know, sometimes we're even setting concrete forms. Sometimes our concrete guy's too busy. So it's like, hey, we'll set all the forms. We'll let you know when it's ready. And they like to just come and pour the concrete and leave. You know, we're typically not doing foundations, or any excavation. We do have a backhoe, and we're able to, you know, dig a trench here or there, or move material, things like that. But, yeah, so it's mostly the carpentry and the finish elements in the home.
It's pretty incredible though. I mean, even at the skill set to be able to set forms and, you know, facilitate that to accelerate the, you know, the concrete phase of construction.
Yeah. And we don't do it all the time, but again, it's like, hey, if our concrete guy's busy, you know, we'll step in and we'll take care of it. And that to me is the benefit of having a self-performing crew. And, you know, we're just able to step in and take care of it and also manage the quality with it too.
I mean, was this always your background as far as, you know, self-performing, learning the trades, you know, as a skilled carpenter?
Yeah, actually. So my background is, you know, working in the trades. So it's funny. I was, in college, I was digging a trench for this guy. He was, I was digging a hole for the mailbox. He was flipping a home and I saw everything he was doing. I was like, man, I see the value. You can make a lot of money flipping homes. I should be the one, you know, doing the work and doing all that. So I actually jumped on with a contractor. They were a home builder, but, it was like 2008. So they were, it was a little volatile there. So they were doing a lot of commercial work. And so I jumped on with them. And it was a super unique opportunity. You know, cause the reason I wanted to get into construction was to learn all the trades so I could flip homes for myself. And so I jumped on with them. You know, the contractor himself was, an electrician. He had his electrical license. And then his, he actually worked with, two of his other brothers. One of his brother was a plumber. He did trim carpentry. His other brother was a framer, did drywall and roofing. And so I really had a unique opportunity being able to work with each one of them and working through all the different trades. And, yeah. So that was kind of my background.
It's incredible. And so walk us through, I mean, sounds like recession, 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, how has that experience played a role, you know, in your career to this point?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really, you know, I know a lot of builders, were kind of hurt during that time, but that's kind of when I jumped in and we had kind of a cool little thing going on because we were out on the reservation, doing commercial jobs. We did the high school in Tuba City. We rebuilt the church, out in Chinle. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of commercial projects that we did and we just self-performed everything. And so you know, I learned a lot of different commercial things, you know, steel framing, you know, a lot of different trades than, you know, residential. And so I got all of that experience. And then I came back into Flagstaff. And then I started flipping homes with one of the guys I worked with. We flipped homes. And so I really feel like, you know, with the recession, I just had a really unique opportunity being able to self-perform and then jump into flipping homes and redoing, gutting the whole house, you know, go in, redo everything in the whole house. And then, you know, just that was kind of a repetition, you know, going from house to house to house, just refining those skills. And so, you know, I don't feel like that was when I was working for other people at the time. So, you know, I was learning and growing, and we had really good opportunities.
It's incredible. And do you feel that because of that experience, when you were working for another GC, self-performing, learning the skills yourself, has that had an influence as to why you're self-performing now as a GC?
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, I still find it hard to, you know, I like to be on site and, you know, be swinging the hammer and doing those things. So I personally have to pull myself off the site and, you know, do the things that grow the business. And, so it's hard, cause I want to be the one on site, but yeah, I think, that does play a part in, you know, and that part of my passion is, you know, teaching and training guys in those trades and skills and seeing, just our guys become craftsmen and just trying to reproduce that.
So there's always this like tipping point, turning point, you know, you're working for another builder. I would imagine getting a ton of skills, opportunity sounded like it was fantastic. You know, what flipped the switch for you to say, okay, I think I'm ready to go off on my own?
Yeah. So, you know, after I was flipping homes, the funny thing is we didn't really, I don't think we made a ton of profit. You know, I wasn't involved in, you know, the buying and selling. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just involved in the construction phase, but we built those at such a high quality that I think we basically just broke even. So it was just kind of a fun, you know, we were able to just make money doing it. We weren't really able to make a ton of profit, but, through that process, I really gained the appreciation for quality and attention to detail. And that's where I kind of shifted my focus to, I really want to be building, you know, custom homes or, you know, remodels at a really high level. And so from there I started, you know, I was a foreman and then superintendent for another GC here in Flagstaff. And we were just doing a lot of remodels and things like that. And so that was, you know, why I kind of wanted to start my own company, to really be able to focus on that quality and attention to detail. And so, yeah, I jumped out and started my own company.
Well, and this is probably a question for anyone who's listening, entrepreneur. I mean, a lot of people may watch you, Cody, and see these incredible homes you're building. And it's rare, if at all, that anyone jumps off, starts a company, and all of a sudden they're building this, you know, 10,000 square foot house, right? Up in Pine Canyon, up in Flagstaff. You know, how has the company evolved, you know, to get you from, and I'd be curious to know kind of the first projects you started on to what you're doing now, you know, how did that transition happen?
Yeah, it's so funny because it's funny how your goals shift. Cause I really think that like from the day one of my company or even before, it's like, I want to be building high-end custom homes in Pine Canyon, and here now I'm working on my second one and my goals are still shifting. And so it's funny how your goals shift, but yeah, starting out, you know, I've always just done like one or two homes a year. You know, we've been in business, we'll be 10 years in August. And so we've just done one, two homes a year. And yeah, starting out, they weren't very big. They weren't, you know, super complicated. They were just your standard homes, but every single home I've always tried to incorporate cool details. I've tried to add extra things in for our clients just because I wanted to, you know, perform that detail or whatever the case is. So we've thrown a lot of details into our homes just for fun. And then along the way, we've done remodels and additions and things like that. But now our focus truly is just on custom homes.
Did you find it like when you were getting your first one, you know, as you're communicating with the client, did they have any reservations hiring Cody and, you know, T3 Construction, you know, as you're kind of, you know, entering this field?
Yeah, no. And I feel kind of blessed in that way because, you know, I had a friend that approached me and said, "Hey, I want to build a home." And I didn't have my license at the time. So, we actually kind of sat down and he knew my experience. You know, he knew the level of detail and quality we could hit and knew that I had experience in construction, but I had never built a home from the ground up. And so there is a lot that goes into, you know, building, you know, developing a budget and managing a schedule and managing subs. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, you know, aside from just performing the work. And so there was some learning curve there that he was willing to work with me on. And, you know, I feel extremely grateful for him. So he actually helped me get my GC license. You know, and I did almost everything on his home, self-performed it with me and one other guy. That was our first home that we did. And, you know, I worked super cheap.
I bet.
super cheap for him. So he got a deal, I got experience. And, you know, from there, I was just able to build my portfolio.
That's incredible. So again, that's the win-win. A lot of people say, well, Brad, how do you start? You know, and there's a few options. Like, you know, you could take the long road and kind of build organically and level up each time. You can, you know, build a spec home, get your name out there, get some experience and stuff. Or, you know, Cody has his accelerated version, right? You call it a lost leader, but essentially you're finding someone to take a risk on you, invest in you. You're going to work your tail off from your side. And they're going to get a home at a steal of a price. I'm sure this is pretty inexpensive, but, with you self-performing so much of it, you know, how was the duration? How did you, factor that into the build time?
Well, I mean, we still had subcontractors, you know, so we had, and it's always kind of a dance of like, you know, what do our guys do or what do I do, you know, when our subcontractors are working. So like as they're doing the foundation, you know, I don't even remember at this point, but I know that we were probably building decks and doing all kinds of other stuff while the foundation was getting built. And then we would jump over and then we would start framing the house and then, you know, we'd be doing siding while rough trades is going on. So it just kind of seemed to work out.
Yeah, that's incredible. How, you know, speak about marketing now, like as you look at your marketing strategies, direction, you know, I know you're pretty active on social media. How has that played a role?
Yeah, social media has been huge. I mean, I've learned a ton and met lots of really cool people. You know, you included Nick Schiffer, you know, even just going to, IBS, just meeting a lot of different people, and just learning and being able to grow and network has been huge.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because, I found that social media is kind of an interesting platform in the sense that, you know, there's definitely, you know, you can get clients from, you know, social media, you can kind of build your platform, but networking, we kind of touched on this earlier in the conversation is that, you know, I found social media as a really quick connection to meet other builders, to understand different processes, see details they're doing in other markets. I think Nick's a good example for you because he's still performing a lot of work just like you are. How has that been for you collaborating and meeting these people through social media and, you know, how responsive have most of them been?
Yeah, it's actually been, surprisingly, you know, when I reached out to you the first time, you know, you responded. Nick's, you know, I do some one-on-one calls with Nick. You know, it's actually, you know, you have these accounts with lots of followers and you think, oh, well, they're never going to talk to me, but it's really been the opposite. And just the camaraderie and people answering questions has just been huge and such a help to me. So.
Yeah, that's great. Speak about how we met. I know you and I have, you know, conversed online, and, you know, fortunately we connected in person, you know, extensively for a few days at the Coalition Summit.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny because, you know, I was following Nick with NS Builders first, and then I found your account, and I was telling my wife, I was like, man, if these two guys ever do an event, you know, put some type of event on, I have to go to that. And I'm not kidding you. The next week you guys announced the Contractor Coalition Summit. And I was like, babe, I gotta go. I've got to go to that. The first one didn't work out. Then the second, or the one in May, in Scottsdale, I mean, just 2 hours from my house, I was like, all right, I've got to make this happen. But then it was our 15-year anniversary on the date. And then you guys ended up switching the date. And so, you know, so thankful I was able to go. So such a good event.
Well, I know you mentioned that there were some, you know, some of the methodologies and theories and principles and stuff you mentioned you had already been applying. You know, how has the company evolved now from what you're doing before to being there networking with other builders and kind of going through, you know, those days of the summit?
Yeah. So it's funny. I mean, I did learn a ton, at the Coalition Summit. But I think the biggest thing I gained was the networking piece, as well as, you know, there was a lot of things that I was hesitant to implement in our business. And there was a lot of things I was kind of working on and thinking through. But I think, you know, when we as builders, you know, aren't able to really get good information from others, you know, like I talked about, if we go to builders in our own market, they're kind of unwilling to share. And so it's kind of like, man, is this standard practice? Should I do this? Should I not do this? So going to the Coalition Summit, I mean, I think all my questions were answered. There was so much transparency, and not just learning from, you know, you and Nick, and the other presenters, but just talking with, the other attendees and just asking them like, hey, what do you guys do, with your contracts? Or, you know, over that event, I was able to get a lot of questions answered, and then just the confidence to be able to move forward with knowing that, hey, this is a solid plan. You know, I'm going to start implementing these in my business. And so we have implemented a lot of it, and already seen a lot of growth, even within the last year.
I love that you share that because, Cody, I look back at my career, and what's interesting is, you know, a lot of us have learned to be confident because of failure, because of mistakes, or lack of a better word, being burned on something, right? Whether from a client or subcontractor. And so you kind of gain, you know, knowledge, wisdom, if you will, through these experiences you have. And what's tough is like when you're in front of a client and you're cornered, for lack of a better word, or from a subcontractor or supplier, and you've never dealt with that situation, it's really hard to know how to respond or what the correct answer solutions should be to get you out of it. And so what I found is that through Builder 20 and networking with other builders such as yourself and the summit and, you know, so many different avenues out there, to your point, you become more educated. You mentioned early on that you're challenging your team in math, right? The reason being is that when they're, I'm sure, building stair stringers, that they really understand how to calculate that, right? And, you know, that practice and repetition and understanding brings a lot of confidence in their day-to-day. And it's no different to us running a business to really understand how to run the business. And you can be a lot more confident when you're standing in front of a client and you know the risk associated with whatever they're asking.
Yeah. And, you know, and like you said, you know, we've made mistakes. And some of those, that's just kind of pains of growing a business. And it's good to have those, experiences, you know, why do we hire a designer, you know, so we don't, you know, we're not stalled out on a project waiting for selections, or, you know, to have those real life examples, you know, is really key to be able to walk a client through, like, you know, this is why we do this, or this is why we follow this process. But you also can learn, you know, you can throw those examples in from, you know, from networking, you know, from the Coalition Summit. It's like, hey, this builder does this because of X, Y, and Z. And so you're able to gain that knowledge and experience from others and be able to share that with clients as well. But yeah, I think, you know, like you said, it really does give you that confidence.
How prevalent are interior designers in your market?
Yeah, so we are, you know, I've heard you say you don't take projects without interior designers. And unfortunately, that's probably one thing that we have been burned with in the past. And so, you know, that is something that we are starting to implement. And, you know, as we grow, it's like, you know, the value of having interior designers is huge, you know, or at least having the architect. You know, we actually have a few architects that we work with that they're really heavily involved in the design as well. And we see that up here in Flagstaff. And there's also there are a few interior designers that that I'm trying to reach out to and talk with. But yeah, I mean, it's a big thing.
Yeah, that is good. You know, because some markets, they struggle a little bit with interior design as far as having a client sign off, understand the value of the interior designer. I know here in our market, it's pretty common. So it's really not too hard of a sell. I think over my years, I've only had a few clients, I don't want to say push back, but not feel a need for design until you kind of walk them through. And one of my favorite examples, and I'm sure similar to you, is that, you know, we work with some great interior designers. And so when a client says, well, I can do the design myself, I know what I like, I typically will bring out a book and say, okay, here's this 3-inch binder with all these details. Is this kind of the similar information you'll be providing? And once they see the value, right, and see what they're providing, it kind of changes the conversation to understand why we put the importance we do, you know, on that design process.
Yeah, no, and that's huge. And, you know, and again, going back to educating the client of, you know, the level of detail that we need to be able to execute, you know, most homeowners are not willing to put that amount of effort into giving us the information that we need. And so it really does create problems down the road, or the burden really falls on us. And we have shouldered that sometimes, you know, we'll go into SketchUp and create details and things like that to move the project along. But then the question is, who pays for that? You know, so it's like, we really need to educate clients that, you know, design is really an important part of the project.
Are you using other software? I know we're using Bluebeam. You mentioned SketchUp. You know, other software you're using besides Build-A-Trend?
That's pretty much it. I mean, we do, Build-A-Trend, we do Bluebeam, and then we do SketchUp. Those are the three big ones that we use.
Yeah, it's always nice to be efficient. So as you mentioned that your company's dealt with growth, especially this last year and a half. What are some of the strategies for growth, especially in your market? I mean, do you have certain goals or aspirations as far as kind of where you're taking the company?
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's funny how goals change. It's like, you know, when I first started, it's like, I don't want to hire, you know, too many employees. I just want to stay small. but now, you know, now we have a superintendent, a project coordinator, and, you know, a field crew. So I guess I don't want to say I don't want to grow, because the second I say that, well, I'll probably change my mind and start growing. But I really just want to invest in the team that we have, continue to add to our field crew and our ability to self-perform, and just grow internally within our processes.
It sounds like it. I mean, I think for anyone listening, that's probably one of the biggest value. I know, you know, not every business owner is doing this. I know you are, Cody, that many of us, especially in construction, is so busy day to day that we're focusing in the business, right? And we're dealing with the fires, if you will, that arise every day. And, you know, very seldom are business owners able to focus on the business and spend that time. And I know that's something that you've really pursued and done. So I commend you, because that shows the growth and competency and, you know, accountability and systems and automation, everything you have, you know, as of today.
Yeah, no, and that's huge for me. It's like, I don't see, I mentioned it before, but it's like, you know, the people who work for me, I don't see it as them working for me. I see it as me working for them and really trying to invest, you know, in them and grow the company that way.
Well, that's amazing. So upcoming and exciting, you know, what do you have coming up, Cody?
Yeah. So, I mean, this home we have in Pine Canyon, we're going to be delivering it to the client, here later this summer. We're getting into finishes and it's been a long build. So we are super excited to finish that and, be able to show just some of the, final product.
That's amazing. And, what do you do for fun?
Yeah. So, I have too many hobbies. I have a lot of hobbies, but lately, I've been getting back into, dirt biking. I grew up dirt biking, so I have a Honda Sierra 450R. And so, we go to Glamis every year, just riding all the single track up here. And then in the summer, looking forward to coming up, we go to Lake Powell, go water skiing, wakeboarding. We have a houseboat share up there. So, yeah, those are kind of the two things that I love doing.
You know, it's funny. It's all these years I've lived here, I've never done a houseboat at Lake Powell, and I've heard it's amazing. I got to get up there one of these years.
Yeah, you have to. It's one of the best things. It's only a few hours from you. So
yeah, it's not too far. I mean, everyone here in Phoenix, they go do a houseboat in Lake Powell, and my brother's probably done it 10 times. And you know, it's one of those bucket list items. You got to get on and just make it happen.
Yeah, there's really nothing like it. I mean, you'll be on a boat for hours and hours and still, you know, you just can go as far as you want. And just the vastness of that lake, it's just a super fun experience. So
best advice you've been given?
The best advice, I think, is just, you know, continue investing in yourself, just trying to be 1% better every single day. And so that's a big thing that we always try to do in our company, just every day, every week, just try to be that 1% better.
And what keeps you up at night?
Man, I think, you know, I'm a people pleaser. So, you know, I really do. I care about my team, you know, retaining our team, you know, the ability to self-perform, you know, our team. I really care about them. I care about our subcontractors, our clients. I really want all of them to be happy. And so, you know, I stress a ton about that. Like, is everybody happy? Is everybody like fulfilled in what they're doing? And so, you know, always trying to invest in them and make sure everybody's happy.
That's amazing. So for those listening, Cody, and again, I appreciate, I know you're busy. So thanks for making time today. It's been long overdue to get you on the podcast. So for those listening, where can they find you?
Yeah. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Instagram is at T3Build. LinkedIn, just look us up, T3 Construction.
Okay. Well, Cody, been a pleasure. Look forward to connecting in person again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Brad.
If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes, please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.